Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. What's going on, Peter?
Not much. It is the this will kind of serve as a productive little summer wrap up type of episode. The summer circuit, for the most part, outside of PG All American, is in the rear view. So it kind of feels weird to be heading into a period without baseball daily, but. There's a lot to talk about from the summer. I think it was a fun circuit, both at the collegiate level and at the prep level.
Yeah, I just finished up the big summer run on my end. That's kind of an annual thing. East Coast Pro in Hoover, Alabama, area code games back in Long Beach, California. So I feel like I've seen a good percentage of the top high school players in the class, kind of in the process now of going through all those notes, getting some player reports written for the website. The first of those notebooks should be available for you guys to read through as you're listening to this podcast. So if you want more insight on specific high school players, definitely check out the site. Peter has been, you basically live at the Cape is my assumption for what happens with you, Peter. So between myself seeing these big high school events and you out on the Cape, feels like we should have a pretty decent view of the 26 class as it stands right now. You also have an updated top 100 college list for the 26 class that dropped on the site this week. So we've got plenty of things to talk about. Where do you want to head first today?
We can head really wherever you want. During the summer, I do essentially just post up on the Cape and go to at least a game a day. And to your point, I think at this juncture, being in the early half of August, I think we have a pretty good hold. We're in a pretty good spot, I think, with the 26 class. I mean, we've already got an updated college top 100. We've got tons of stuff on the prep side coming out. It's definitely ahead of where we were at this point last year, I think. So that I'm excited about, but I guess we could go in whichever direction you think would be.
I'm curious. Well, just having spent so much time on the high school players recently, I am curious just to get your view of like who the standout names were on the Cape for the 2026 class. I know the talent of the Cape is tricky to pin down these days because there's so many moving parts. There's the pre-draft cycle of players, there's the post-draft players, there's CNT that kind of pulls some players away from the Cape. So I'm curious if there is like a single player who had sort of a Matt Shaw-esque summer on the Cape, a Travis Bazana sort of summer on the Cape. If there's anyone like that for you, or if there are any players that you just were excited about while taking in all those Cape games.
Yeah, so I think the issue with the Cape and summer ball in general, you know, not only this year, but going forward, especially with the Cape that I saw, is just the amount of turnover there is across all 10 teams. I mean, there are a lot of variables now that the league has to deal with, and this is across the entire summer ball landscape. But again, I can only speak to the Cape. But there are so many variables now and wrinkles that they have to deal with that really were non-existent even 3 or 4 summers ago, like the introduction and the transfer portal becoming what it's been, NIL, the collegiate national team, and then college coaches and agents and advisors becoming seemingly more and more cautious as it pertains to innings limits for respective pitchers. It just creates like almost a revolving door for the summer. Like the best pitcher I saw on the Cape, and you'll be able to read this in the magazine and then tomorrow for the Cape League today for the Cape League top 25 that Jeff Ponce and I put together. But the best arm I saw was Jake McCoy from South Carolina. He was there for all of 12 innings across 3 starts. Like that's kind of what we're dealing with at this point. And the best hitter I saw was Chris Rembert, rising sophomore and draft eligible sophomore at that.
Mm-hmm. We have Auburn. Chris ranked 27 on our current draft list right now.
Yes. And I, for what it's worth, and we had discussed this one on our initial rankings call, that's probably at least for me, that might be a little bit on the conservative side with Chris. I was a huge fan of his. I was lucky to get him a couple of times before he left for Team USA. He was only on the Cape for five games, and I think I definitely got the best look at him because he went 2-for-4 with two homers, turned around two fastballs at 94. I think they left the bat at both at 105 plus. I think the second was like top spun at 108 into a team's bullpen in left field. So I really like Chris Rembert. And then all of the USA guys before they left, like kind of the main dudes, like Eric Becker was good. Tyler Bell was really good. Ace Reese I liked a lot. Ace Reese offensively is a really appealing package and a really appealing profile. You know, it's bat and hand speed.
And we have Ace ranked 16 right now on our combined list.
And the one thing with Ace is in kind of the narrative, or at least part of the narrative with him in this year's cycle will probably be the lack of defensive ability. He's not a great athlete. The actions need work at third. He's got the arm strength to handle it, but they even tried to hide him out a little bit in left field in the Cape, and that didn't go great. So it'll be interesting to follow that. But outside of those guys, kind of the usual suspects. It's funny now to talk about Henry Ford again.
Yeah. Well, before you get into those guys, I am curious with guys like Rembert, who played, like you said, five games, had 23 plate appearances, with guys like Ace Reese, who played eight games, 36 plate appearances. One of the challenges I always feel like is it's hard to get a lot of ABs for the high school players on the circuit in these very pitcher-oriented events where pitchers are throwing one or two innings, maybe three innings. So each time a hitter comes up to bat, it's a new arm. It's just a very challenging situation for hitters to succeed in these showcase events. The Cape is a little different because you're playing like real actual games. But like, what do you think is the value of the Cape at this point from an evaluation standpoint? Because the pitching is down. None of the top arms are going out there to throw. So the competition is just not what it used to be. The fact that it's a revolving door with all these players means your looks just are so limited and artificial. Like if you get a hitter who just doesn't have a great few games, do you feel like you still see them enough to get a good read on them at this point? Or do you think the Cape is turning into maybe more of a showcase for kind of your second and third tier sort of prospects where you can see maybe some more of the depth of the class? But if you want the top end guys, you're either not seeing the arms at all, or you basically have to just follow it around USA Baseball.
It's a really good question. I think that the first 2 to 3 weeks of the summer, like pre-USA, I think that obviously that's when the league is at its best, just hearing about the guys that we just touched on. So I think there's some value there. And I also think just given the state of college baseball with how hot the bats are, the baseballs being like hitting Titleist, like you obviously don't have that on the Cape. Everyone's swinging a wood bat.
Right.
The baseballs are, for lack of a better word, they're terrible. They're like hitting tomatoes. So, I mean, it's like it is pretty stacked against the hitters, even though that you're not going to see the premier arms that you probably would want to. Like there are arms that stand out every summer, and the same was the case this year. Like guys kind of made a name for themselves and pitched themselves
right
into a pretty good position heading into the fall. But for the most part, like you're not seeing like the Liam Petersons, the Jackson Flores of the world. So I think it's just seeing how guys handle a wood bat, seeing how they do against, for the at least talking about these the first half of the summer guys, seeing how they do against quality arms. And I think that, you know, even though you don't get a huge sample size with these players, I think every in-person look kind of holds some sort of value. Like, you know, even if, you know, I didn't see Chris Rembert for all five of his games, I saw him a couple of times, but you can kind of get a feel for what the tools are, how a hitter handles himself in the box, what the actions look like, and sort of start building out your opinion of that player and start piecing together that puzzle and, you know, following him and all of that. So, like, yes, there is still value there, but towards the end of the summer, like, the league is so decimated at that point.
Right.
You know, we're talking post All-Star game. So post All-Star game being like the third week in July, after the All-Star game, like it is essentially just, you know, there are guys coming up from other leagues who have performed well, mm-hmm. To help fill the holes of the guys that had left.
How thinned out is the scouting crowd there for those last 2 weeks? Because I imagine a lot of them have headed off to East Coast and area codes.
This year was ultra, ultra thin. Like yeah. I had the place to myself, like the run right. of the run of the place.
Cause I guess pros and cons.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it was post All-Star game this year, super, super thin. Really post draft. It was thin. There was a little bit of a re-rush for about a week there, but
yeah,
it got thin pretty quick, which is the case every year now with the July draft, and then especially this summer with the timing of East Coast and area code.
Right.
So I mean, I've talked about it with a bunch of people, and it'll be really interesting to see the place in which the league is in about, I don't know, 3 to 5 summers, because mm-hmm. I think just it being the Cape League on its own will hold value, and you know, they'll always get good players, but I guess just that speaks to, you know, me wondering where the league is also me kind of wondering where summer ball will be in
right.
3 to 5 summers. Like
right.
it's pretty interesting to think about. And you also have this kind of talk and persistent rumbling of, you know, maybe a shift in when opening day is for college baseball. So I don't know, like, there aren't going to be less variables like in 3 to 5 summers, like mm-hmm. for, it kind of sucks to say, but like the college baseball off season and whatnot is not going to be any simpler in 3
right.
years. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what it looks like, what the talent pool looks like then, mm-hmm. And whatnot. I could also be being like sky is falling dramatic, and it looks the exact same, but
right.
I have thought about it.
Okay, well, let's pivot back to some players after some inside baseball sort of industry talk. Is there like a big, I also cut you off when you were breaking down some guys, so maybe there's some more names you want to get into, but I'm curious if there's any like big winner of the summer as well on the college side, because that is typically like there's someone who really improves their stock or just maintains maybe an approach change from the spring and kind of continues impressing in that regard. I'm curious if there's a name or maybe a few names who you came away really impressed with.
Yeah. So I don't want to be the like bearer of bad news, but to your initial point about someone having like a Matt Shaw or a Travis Bezzana type of summer, like not even close.
Yeah.
Just because like everyone that was performing well, honestly, like either left or has a sample size of like 15-ish type games. Like no one really blew up. Like even Mike Anu, who won the MVP, like I think he like if you want to toss him into the bucket of a guy who kind of established himself and cemented himself as like a legitimate draft prospect throughout mm-hmm. the summer, like you could probably throw him in there, though he does have his own like clear flaws. Like he won the MVP after hitting .280 with a K rate at almost 33%. If you want like kind of an under the hood look of like who stuck around for the summer.
Yeah.
Like he's a fun player with tools, but like the hit tools below average, where he fits defensively is a huge question mark. Like he made, I think at Marshall this spring, they had him at shortstop. I think he made over 30 errors.
Oof.
So they just stuck him in center this summer and let him run around. Like he runs well, he's a good athlete. There's some thump there, but I really wonder how he's going to do against SEC pitching, because he entered the summer is not unknown, but like I think that, you know, not a whole lot of people were familiar with Mike Anu's game. So he stacked up like 5-6 homers pretty quickly, and then as the summer went on, people learned how to pitch to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's evident with the final line, though. I mean, he took home MVP in the Cape, like that's going to hold value for better or worse. But mm-hmm. other guys that I came away like impressed with, and I'll keep it shorter on them than Micah, but who at least I was kind of unfamiliar with heading into the summer, was Trey Broussard from Houston. He recently cracked our updated college top 100 fun, twitchy, athletic center fielder. Like, there are tools there. He'll never hit for much power, I don't think, but feel for the barrel, plus runner, excellent athlete, up the middle type of profile. Like, he'll perform well this spring at Houston, former San Jac kid. I liked him a lot. And then just kind of thinking it, like Aiden Robbins from Seton Hall, I was really curious to see what he would do after the spring he had, in which he hit 422 with, you know, 20 bags and 30 extra base hits. He won the league batting title. So he won the batting title.
And he's a Texas transfer, correct?
Yes, yeah. He's transferring from Seton Hall to Texas. Yep. And he won the league batting title after hitting 307, which, again, is sort of a – like that, he had a really good summer, but usually you've got like a couple of guys in the batting title race that are, you know, around 340 to 350, push him in 300s. Higher than that. But he was excellent this summer. Won the batting title, 6 doubles, 6 homers. Impacted the baseball a lot more than I thought he would with Wood. And he also plays where he played, Harwich. Was a really non-hitter friendly ballpark, and he fared really well there. Like, he's a left field type of profile in the long run, but offensively, it's a really enticing package. The bat to ball skills are plus. There's bat speed. I'm a fan of his, even more so after the summer. And then just kind of darting around a little bit more mentally. Cam Johnson from Kituit, I really liked. Almost player comp-ish, definitely body comp. But he's got a lot of Brooks Baldwin to him. And that's kind of a deep pull, but he's a current big leaguer with the White Sox. But he's this twitchy, athletic kid, no doubt plus runner, really good athlete. Like, how much physicality and weight he'll put on is kind of a question mark. It's almost like if you had seen him, you'd probably be in the same bucket, but it's one of those bodies where it's like, can you even add, like, he's a skinny, wiry kid, but it's like, can you even add like a whole lot of weight to this? Sort of like how Brooks was coming out of UNCW.
Right.
Which is a question mark, but there's twitch, there's tools. He plays the game really, really hard. It felt like he came up time and time again in big spots. Like, the tools are there. They're really enticing intangibles. Mm-hmm. He's transferring from Wichita State to Oklahoma. So it'll be a big spring for him in the SEC. And then outside of those guys, I'm trying to think. Jaron Advincula was going really, really good before he left due to an injury.
So we're going to have two Cam Johnsons at Oklahoma now. Cam Johnson, the left-handed pitcher, and now Cam or Camden Johnson, the infielder, outfielder, and hitter. That'll be fun.
Yeah, that definitely won't be confusing at all this spring when we have to decide between there, talk through them. But Jaron Advincula going from Cal to Georgia Tech was excellent before leaving. Kind of flashed what he always has throughout his college career, like plus hit ability, feel for the barrel. There's honestly like a little bit of Nick Madrigal to his game, but probably less bat to ball ability, more thump though. And he's a left-handed hitter, bigger kid.
Right.
So I think when all is said and done, he's got the upside to go where like Gavin Keelan went.
Yeah. And we got him ranked 16 right now. On your top college list, actually on the combined list, we've got him 24. So
I think that's a fair spot, and he can always play his way higher or lower. But we could bounce names off, you know, for probably an entire podcast episode, but those were the few guys that I thought had a great year. Brendan Lawson is a freshman from Florida. The wink, wink, nudge, nudge. He'll probably top the 2027 list when that's re-released in a couple of weeks. Like, he looked like the real deal offensively. Like, it's a unique operation and setup with that ultra high handset, but he does a good job getting in a consistently good hitter's position and impacting the baseball. Handled velo well, at least the velo that he saw. He hit 333 with 4 homers.
Yeah. I feel like I've always seen him hit. He always controls the zone. He's got solid power. I'll be curious where he winds up defensively. He's played a lot of third base. He's always been a little bit bigger physically in the lower half. So he's a really fun player.
Yeah. Defensively is a question mark because I don't think it's third base.
Well, that's upsetting If so, yeah. I was hoping he would maybe be able to pick it enough to play there. But
yeah, at least in what I saw, I don't think he's a pro third baseman. Mm. But no, the offensive profile with him is the real deal. And what's also kind of interesting about Brendan is he'll probably be back on the Cape next summer, barring an injury, because he's Canadian, so he's not eligible to play for Team USA's collegiate national team, sort of like Travis Bazzano was. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see him back there. And then one guy I want to give some love to, and he's a 2027 eligible as well. I knew very little about him coming into the summer, but Chris Ramirez from Cal Baptist, he's this short little 5'8" kid, but he was outstanding every time I saw him on both sides of the baseball. He hit 350 at Cal Baptist. He's staying at Cal Baptist. He's not a portal guy. And then this summer, across 17 games, he hit 380, a few doubles, 10 walks to 3 strikeouts. Like, the bat-to-ball skills and with him are elite. The approach is outstanding. Controls the strike zone really, really well. Like, undoubtedly, throughout the entire summer, he was the toughest kid to strike out in the entire league.
Right.
Like, without a doubt in my mind. And I think I only saw him swing and miss, like, twice. He didn't chase.
Maybe this is the Nick Madrigal comp.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he's got a chance to kind of blow up over the next year and a half. I don't know just how high his prospect status will get, because there is a real – I mean, he lacks juice, and he probably always will. But, like, there's a chance heading into the 27 cycle, which is eons away, but he could be a plus-hit guy, borderline plus defender at short, like, really quick and soft.
He was the – WAC freshman of the year, WAC defensive player of the year, all WAC first team, all defensive team, obviously. So it sounds like he had just a pretty dominant season all around outside of home run department. I mean,
he'll probably run that back in the WAC, but I mean, I was really, really impressed with him on both sides, like buttery smooth actions at short, arm strength to stick there. Mm. Hit ability was outstanding, like baseball sense off the charts. He checked a lot of my like personal cheese ball type of boxes. Like, obviously there are exciting tools there that you can kind of feel juiced up about. But man, I loved getting to watch him play day in and day out. And hopefully he's back next summer, since he was just a freshman this year. But it would not totally blow me away if he snags himself at least a Team USA camp invite. But that's like one maybe underrated guy, at least from a household name standpoint, for listeners to circle and highlight with a red pen. Cause I'm a real believer in this kid.
Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I just took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and I will soon discover my biological age. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means you have a lot of control over it. This morning, I took the True Age test. It was easy. I answered a few questions on my phone, watched a video that showed me how to perform the test, pricked my finger, I didn't even feel the prick to be honest, provided a sample, then dropped the sample in a mailbox. It's a prepaid envelope, so I didn't even need to go to the post office. In about 2 to 3 weeks, I'll get a detailed online report about my aging and health, fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BA2022. To get 20% off of your entire order subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BA2022 at checkout to get 20% off your order. Your future self will thank you.
Nice. That's awesome. A handful of names on the college side. I got a couple on the high school side I want to mention here before we get out of here. Mostly from area code games, two names. I mean, the first one I have to mention is Jensen Hirschkorn, who does not rank on our combined overall. top 100 list, but Ben has him 83 on our top 200 high school list that was updated in July. He is a right-handed pitcher out of California, 6'7", 205 pounds. He probably had the single most dominant look that I've ever seen at the area code games. It was nine batters up, nine batters down, all swinging strikeouts, and it was real stuff to go along with the performance. It was a pretty special look. It was swing and strikeout on the slider, slider, fastball, fastball, slider, slider, changeup, fastball, slider. It was a just overwhelmingly dominant outing. He was 92 to 96 with the fastball. I had 196. He basically sat 93, 95. Really easy velocity, smooth and controlled delivery, thrown from a three-quarter slot. The breaking ball was 81 to 83. It was this solid, consistent slider that he landed to his glove side. Seven swings and misses on that pitch overall on eight swings. So the miss rate, the swinging strike rate, both exceptional. With that pitch, he rounded out the arsenal with a changeup that also got misses. Really effective right on left piece, 86 to, there was one that was 89. I'm not sure if that was like just a fastball taken down, but it looked like a changeup to me out of the hand. So it's three pitches that I thought were above average or better. Solid control, great body. It was just a dominant look. I think he was kind of the talk of area code games for that performance. I think for a number of people, it's like the most dominant outing they've seen there. If you strike out all nine batters you face, you had yourself a pretty good week. So that's the number one guy that I came away really impressed with.
I was going to say, I remember reading about it in Slack, one actually from Josh, and for the, I guess a little bit more inside baseball, not to tip anyone's hands, but usually the mentality is when Josh Norris, our 80 grade prospect writer and human being, gets excited about a player at any level,
yeah,
you typically want to kind of listen and get your notebook out and take some notes. Like he was super juiced up about this kid. Also, you were, Los, which had me all the more excited about him. And then the video backed it up. Like, to your point, there was a whole lot of like, this is kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, I think Josh has tweeted out some video already, but we'll have more in the coming weeks as I get through my full notebook on area code games. But it was a dominant outing. And also, sidebar, going to area code games with Josh Norris, this is his first area code games event. And I tried to downplay the action as much as possible because I feel like the pro guys always come and watch the amateur players and are always like disappointed and wanting more. But it was nice to hear that Josh was very pleasantly surprised with the quality of play from area code. So whether that's a testament to just the players who come to this event annually or a testament to the 2026 caliber of talent, I was very happy to see Josh get excited about the play out there. And then one last player I'll mention before we get out of here today is Blake Bowen. He was one of the more impressive hitters of the event for me. He's an outfielder out of the J. Sarah Catholic High School in San Juan Capistrano, California, committed to Oregon State. 6'3", 215 pounds, right. He was just a barrels machine. It felt like every time he stepped to the plate, it was loud contact going the other way. In total, he went 6-for-15 over five games, four singles, two doubles, two strikeouts. And the way I was taking notes at area codes, which really I'm probably going to replicate this moving forward because it was just a lot easier to see like how the hitters who stood out. Typically, I have like these scout cards with really detailed sections for both pitchers and hitters. I kind of simplified things for the hitters and basically built out some ways to track them in just the roster. But I highlight ABs for hitters that are either quality or really loud contact. And it feels like Blake Bowen's entire scout card for me is just one big highlighter. It was just barrel, turning around 90 miles per hour, 99 exit velocity for a single, 104 mile per hour double, a 98 mile per hour flyout, a 98 mile per hour flyout, 103 mile per hour ground out, 87 mile per hour single to the opposite field. So it's like his performance was impressive. I think the quality of his ABs, even in at-bats where he did not walk away with a hit, was one of the more impressive of the event. He was incredibly strong, real knack for the barrel. It was an impressive hitter. I would imagine, I mean, we already have him in a decent spot on the list. He's in our top 200 or our top 100. Kind of have him spotted in like the third round range. Hard for me to see him not moving up after what he's done this summer with that sort of performance.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, it seems like he's had a good summer circuit for himself. And,
yeah,
you know, it's a good body. Bat speed's legit from what I've seen, at least on video. So it's good to hear he had a good area code. Were there any, sort of in a similar breath to the Keep Lee, were there any other, like, you know, sleeper, perhaps under the radar guys between ECP and area code that jumped onto your radar or not so much? I mean, the 26 class, especially the 2026 group of high schoolers, at least at this point, appears to be loaded and uber talented. So I'm curious if there was anyone that was previously somewhat of an unknown that stood out to you.
I mean, for the most part, this is like my first looks at a lot of these guys. So like there are the famous guys that I'm aware of, but I'm still seeing all of them for the first time. One name who's further down, who's not on our combined list, New Jersey product, shortstop out of DePaul Catholic High School in Wayne, New Jersey. As far as I know, still uncommitted. Maybe that's changed after this performance. But Jason Amalbert at area code games, he was another player who was just constantly on the barrel, really loud contact, really impressive base runner, actually. Every time he got on the bases, he was showing excellent jumps, excellent instincts. He was on the Yankees area codes team, which is probably the most overmanaged team at the event. Those guys are absolutely playing to win every game, and in late in crunch time situations, he was being pinch run. Like he would come in as a pinch runner and would actually make a pretty immediate impact in that capacity. So I thought he was one of the other hitters who really stood out. And then I'll just mention this in closing, but Striker Pence, the nephew of Hunter Pence, who's this, it's awesome going to these events because you're always going to see something that you've never seen before. And this is a sophomore in high school. He's a member of the 2028 class, 6'6", 195 pounds. He came out, Peter, throwing 100 miles per hour. He threw like seven straight fastballs at 100 miles per hour. He pitched just one inning, but it was downright silly. I'm trying to scroll up to my notes here. But,
well, because I know the heater was really, like, I mean, it was 98 to 100, spun it at like 24 to 2500 RPMs, but like the slider looked legit too. Like he ripped off a couple of bangers, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, he did. I had it as an above average or too. I had it as an above average or plus slider. It was 83-85, really good bite. I mean, the arm slowed some, but it was 2300 to 2600 RPM, like three quarter shape, 10 to 4 kind of shape on the slider. He struck out two batters and got a pop up, finished all those ABs on the slider. It was like freaky sort of stuff. The guys I can remember throwing, I don't think I've seen any pitcher ever this young throwing this hard. So I think it's like kind of concerning in some ways, but also just shocking the arm talent. But like Travis Sikora, I remember watching him throw, I think 101 or 100 miles per hour, but this was a year later. So still an underclassman, but not sophomore. I know Miguel Cime Jr. was throwing 99 as an underclassman, but everyone was wondering if he was going to reclass to at least 27 and his stuff would fit in right now. So that will be just an interesting name to follow. Fingers crossed he can stay healthy, because that is obviously the big concern when you're that young throwing that hard. But he will certainly be a famous name if he's not already kind of becoming there. But again, we've got big notebooks coming up with tons of dope on a lot more players on the site if you guys want to check that out. We've got plenty to talk about over the next few weeks. So Peter, any final comments before we get out of here?
No, it was a fun summer. It's kind of nice to officially turn the page to the class of 2026. Yeah. And we're kind of off and running with looks on that group. So like you said, there'll be a ton of content, whether it be in the form of pieces and rankings or podcasts to keep you occupied, not only throughout the fall, but before we know it, it's kind of crazy. We'll be sitting here talking about college opening day happening in a week's time. So
yeah.
hey, it'll be a fun time of year and looking forward to it.
Cool. Yeah. All right. For Peter, I'm Carlos. Thanks for supporting BA. Thanks for following along, listening to the podcast, watching everything on YouTube, reading everything on the site. We really appreciate the support, and we'll be back next week. So long, everybody.